The U.S. media has been filled with stories about how Hamas raped Israeli women during its October 7th attacks. But some commentators say that there wasn't much solid evidence or survivor testimony to back up those stories, and that much of the so-called evidence came from ZAKA, the Israeli organization that fabricated the beheaded baby story. In addition, there appears to be evidence that Palestinian women and girls were sexually assaulted by Israeli soldiers. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with investigative reporter Arun Gupta about the rape stories and the way the Western media has covered them.
So when you first heard these stories about Hamas raping Israeli women, were you skeptical or did you think they might be credible?
It wasn't so much hearing the stories. I was very skeptical. It was just what was being said. There were very few details. There was no hard evidence. There was no survivor testimony. There was no forensic evidence. There was no photo or video evidence. And as the stories kept coming out, they kept becoming more outlandish. And also, there were patterns that started to emerge, one of which was many, if not most, of the claims were coming from this incredibly scandal-ridden organization known as ZAKA. It's this semi-governmental, semi-volunteer organization of Orthodox Jewish men who have a really just horrendous past, where their founder raped scores, if not hundreds, of Israeli children. And so they were responsible for a lot of outlandish stories. And
children, you say, not
children. Yeah. This, and so this one guy is responsible for more rapes of Israelis, Yehuda Meshi Zahav. He died a couple of years ago when it was outed, and he tried to commit suicide, and he wound up in the hospital in a coma and died a year later in 2022. The story broke open in 2021, and all these people started coming forward, and there was a lot written. And he founded ZAKA, and two of his brothers were also involved in rape as well. And it's basically the story of ZAKA is Enron meets Epstein Island meets George Santos, because the ZAKA volunteers, one of them in particular, who's become very notorious, Yossi Landau, has four times admitted on camera that they fabricate stories. He say, we use our imagination. The bodies tell us stories. So that was one thing. The other thing was there's only really 12 sources for these accounts of rapes on October 7th. 11 of them are directly tied to the Israeli military or police, and 8 of them have fabricated other atrocities. The New York Times released a story of an Israeli woman. Her story appears completely credible, that she was in captivity or sexually assaulted in some way. She's the only survivor who has come forward. Her story has a lot of details about her captivity, about the person who did it, about the situation. There's no reason to disbelieve her. But what's important, and this is a huge but, is that for months, Israel has created this false rape narrative about what Hamas did on October 7th in Israel. And there is still zero evidence for it. And they have admitted on numerous occasions that they use these false stories. In fact, ZAKA keeps getting cited, including by Netanyahu himself, for influencing Western media. So this was essentially this massive atrocity propaganda that was used as cover for the genocide. It's been used to keep Israeli society in kind of this state of rage. There was one official in Netanyahu's office with the National Information Directorate, which is basically their propaganda unit, who said outright that the men of ZAKA were instrumental, that in their stories influencing Western media and showing them what monsters Hamas were. And he said the entire state of Israel was fixed on the narrative that Hamas equals ISIS. And he said, and this is pretty much a direct quote, you can find it in my Yes Magazine article, that this allowed Israel to deepen the legitimacy to use great force. And so he's
Well, how
admitting
come
it.
Western media outlets didn't pick up what you're talking about, that this group is not credible, that they admit to making up stories? Aren't they aware of that?
Well, here's the thing about Western media is they have always been mouthpieces for empire. You know, whatever war you want to choose, right? Korea, Vietnam, first Iraq war, second Iraq war, Afghanistan war. And, you know, Israel, as Netanyahu said not too long ago, is America's aircraft carrier in the Middle East. And the thing is, you know, the other thing this does, this what I call the Great Israeli Rape Hoax, is it completely covers up and erases the systematic sexual violence against Palestinians, right? On the one hand, we now have one survivor, Israeli survivor, who, like I said, she looks completely credible, saying that she was raped, and that's horrible and one of too many. But in terms of the Palestinians, there are all these women who've come forward talking about being stripped naked in front of their families, being, you know, sexually manhandled during basically while they're being processed in the prison. There are three different reports, one from the UN, one from UNRWA, and one from Euromed Monitor, that have either direct interviews with these women. A lot of these women are also speaking on camera or have given audio testimony. And then there's just a huge amount of evidence that everyone has seen of naked and semi-naked Palestinian men being paraded and humiliated. And also, just I can't tell you how many videos I've seen and stories I've read of torture, of assassination. You know, this one story I just read was a family that was stripped completely naked. The mother was holding the Quran. The soldiers told her to drop the Quran. She refused, and they just shot her dead on the spot. And this, and you know,
And
it's
isn't
just
Western media picking up those kind of stories?
no,
Not at
because
all.
what it does. If they started to pick it up, first of all, you know, for months into the war, a killing only happened if Israel said it happened. You know, CNN, there was a really good piece in the Guardian a few months ago. CNN, nothing can go on CNN unless it goes through its Jerusalem bureau, and Israel exercises military censorship over all the media in Israel. So basically, anything on CNN is just a mouthpiece for the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. And, you know, this isn't some grand conspiracy. This is how empire works, you know, in terms of the state influence and co-optation of the media. And we have to remember, we don't really have a news media anyway. Much of it is just, it's propaganda, it's infotainment, it's now a huge part of it is just straight out grifting. And kind of the legacy media that does exist that is capable of doing good journalism is completely in the pocket of empire. You see some good reporting, some decent reporting here and there, but the overall narrative is that Hamas are monsters. You know, the situation in Gaza is obviously just getting so horrific that the media have to pay attention to it. And I don't have any faith in social media, but there is a lot more that, you know, you can see on social media. So that's the only thing forcing the legacy media to offer any even little glimpse of the truth as to what is really going on. You know, this is easily one of the worst genocides in human history in terms of this rapidity, the speed at which it's happened, and its totality. You know, it is the murder of an entire society. You know, it is not just the killing, the starvation, the torture, the absolute psychological destruction of a people. It's destruction of everything. It's you know, the legislature and government offices, healthcare, sanitation, waterworks, you know, new terms have been introduced, or people are learning new terms, such as domicide, the destruction of housing, scholasticide, the destruction of universities and education system. The destruction is so totalizing that over 100 important archaeological sites have been destroyed. This and people can go on to social media. This is the first live stream genocide in human history, and watch this. So the media are forced to respond to it somewhat. And the other factor is, frankly, you know, the pro-Zionist forces have built up a very massive and effective political machine. And we've seen similar machines, such as with the NRA, right, who would destroy anyone who dared cross it. That is the what the Zionists do, that they destroy anyone who is not lockstep with them, which is why they're putting something like $100 million reportedly into defeating members of the squad because they won't jump on board the genocide train.
You do see on local TV reports, you know, because they're covering all the demonstrations, pro-Palestinian demonstrations calling for a ceasefire and pointing out the genocide. They do interview those people, and so some kind of pro-Palestinian point of view does get out. Do you see any hope there?
You know, we always have to look for hope wherever we can find it. That's important. That's what keeps people going. But can any of us imagine what it is like to be in Gaza right now? I think this, when it is finally, you know, reaches some sort of conclusion. And I don't even want to say over, because who knows if it's ever going to really be over, because Israel has been tormenting Gaza now for nearly 20 years, that the stories that are going to come out, the literature, the art, if it's allowed to come out, it's going to be on the scale of the Holocaust. You know, how many images have we already seen that are just seared into our minds? You know, the grandfather kissing his dead granddaughter, soul of my soul, the little girl who was killed, blown up by an explosion, and she's hanging from a jutting piece of metal on a wall. Her legs are shredded and gone.
People are seeing those images, and that's why the majority of Americans want a ceasefire, right?
The large majority, and something like 80% of Biden's base. One of the UN special rapporteurs, and there's a second one, Rima Aslam, I think. They're the ones who've been outspoken about documenting Israeli sexual violence against Palestinian, sexual and gender-based violence against Palestinian women and girls. Yesterday at the UN Human Rights, I think it's Council meeting, I was listening to Francesca Albanese's testimony, and at the end, she says, you know, people around the world overwhelmingly have gathered to protest in the streets, to demand an end to the occupation, demanding an end to demanding a ceasefire, and demanding an end to illegality, and calling for legal rights for all from the river to the sea. Now, that's a pretty remarkable statement coming from a UN special rapporteur. And she has great legitimacy in terms of her role. But have you seen that anywhere in the media? You know, why isn't that all over the media, that statement?
They do play what, or they do report what the Secretary General says and what some of the...
But you know, any like minor Israeli official can get a platform. But you know, I know you're playing devil's advocate, but you know, let's go back to the Vietnam War, right? You know, the whole arc of the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg was that the Pentagon was internally, you know, it was all about how the Pentagon was putting this shiny, happy face on the war, and there was light at the end of the tunnel. But a real huge part of this story was, and in many ways, the real story was internally, the Pentagon was more critical of the Vietnam War effort than all the media was. And you have to remember, there was a far more robust media during the Vietnam War, right? You know, cable news hadn't taken over. There was no real internet to speak of. And yet all these massive amounts of print and broadcast media outlet were just following the line that, you know, the U.S. was winning the war in Vietnam and defeating these, you know, evil communist terrorists. But internally, the Pentagon was more critical. And we saw a largely a repeat of this with the Iraq War, you know, in 2003, and certainly with the Persian Gulf War, you know, whatever war you want to pick, the Serbian war, you know, over Kosovo, you know, the toppling the elite, the criminal war against Libya in 2011, the media are just cheerleaders. You know, when the Taliban defeated the U.S. after 20 years in 2021. I mean, those press conferences were absurd, you know, like a bunch of just like, you know, brain donkeys, the media, you know, like who lost Afghanistan, you know. And so we shouldn't be surprised at all that the media are just, for the most part, if not overwhelmingly, a mouthpiece for this criminal state, this apartheid state that is carrying out genocide, this apartheid state that is basically verging on fascism. And, you know, it's carrying out genocide in Gaza and large scale ethnic cleansing in the West Bank. Ask yourself, how much are you hearing about what's going on in the West Bank? You know, and just picking out a story here or there does not counter the narrative. And I'll give you one final example. During the lead up to the 2003 Iraq war, everyone in the media signed on to Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, except two reporters from what was then known as Knight Ridder, the news service. It would change its name to McClatchy. And they were the only ones in all of the mainstream media. And you're talking about thousands.
Even though the UN weapons inspectors said there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Right. And you know, it was all the stuff about the yellow kingdom and, you know, the fake defector ball that the New York Times completely gave this huge platform to and, you know, influence to create a justification for the war. So there were two dissenters, right? But what matters is not a dissenter here or there. It's, you know, think of it like a river. It's the mighty current. It's not like a little side stream that is shaping the course of events, that is shaping the geography of events. It is the mighty current. And the mighty current is pro-Israel, which means pro-genocide. And in 2003, it was pro-invade Iraq. And, you know, we know what a disaster that has turned into to this very day.
It just seems that there's just so much attention on this through televised images and social media that it's just very different than, say, what happened in East Timor, where the U.S.-backed Indonesians were able to kill like a third of the population over the course of years, you know, not as rapid as what's happening now. But, you know, nobody knew about that. Or very few people.
Sure. And I think, you know, the media are forced to reckon with, you know, and there was a few months ago, there was a New York Times in one of its article on Gaza was basically doing the old man routine, those damn kids and their TikTokers, you know, and it's just like, yeah, because on TikTok, and you have to, I think there's also good evidence that this attack on TikTok, and of course it's social media, it's filled with garbage. I'm not saying that it's this great outlet, but what I have found, and I've spent a lot of time going through TikTok, is there is a lot of really good information, a lot of really just great speeches by people in other countries. Like I'll often see speeches, and I forget what the Irish Parliament is called, because, you know, support for Palestine is really strong in Ireland. You know, the Irish Prime Minister came and admonished Biden in the White House, because the Irish see themselves, you know, it's the same. We have to remember Zionism was created by the British. The Zionist terrorist gangs in the 1930s were trained and armed the British, right? Zionism was just another British colonial project. And so the Irish have historical solidarity, you know, and so yes, this is getting out there and it's circumventing the legacy media, which I think is great. And the legacy media, frankly, they deserve to die off given how pro-genocide they are. The New York Times is still not called for a permanent and immediate unconditional ceasefire. You know, all this going on about the hostages, it's just like, oh yeah, let's talk about the 2.2 million hostages in Gaza. You know, it's just like, sure, you can say that it's a war crime, but the whole reason Hamas refuses to give them up without a permanent ceasefire, a full complement of aid being let in, without Gazans being able to return to wherever they came from, is they know once the hostages are released, they have no more leverage at all. And this is also Netanyahu doesn't want to see the hostages released. Wants to be out genocide and ethnically cleanse those he can't kill. That's the goal of the government. That is why Hamas is, they are politically correct in saying no release of hostages until there is a permanent ceasefire, until Israel remove all its forces, until all the other conditions are met, because it's the only leverage they have to stop this genocidal war.
And yet many Israelis, their attitude is, well, we just want to live in peace and they keep attacking us. What else can we do?
Well, I'll leave you with, so look, it's when thinking about what's gone on with what I, like I said, leaving aside this one rape that happened in captivity and looks completely credible, this whole narrative we've heard has been on October 7th, and ideas help us to understand, and historical parallels help us to understand what's going on in the world. And it struck me, really, what's going on with this Israeli rape is it is no different rape hoaxes we have seen throughout American history. So in the 1700s, there was what was known as captivity narratives. This is in colonial America, that, you know, about white women, either fictional, there was a high level of literacy, either fictional works who were taken captive by Native Americans. And it was all about how white feminine purity was under attack from these brutal savages. Therefore, we need to wipe out the brutal savages. In reality, when historians have gone through and actually looked through basically the memoirs of women who were captured, rape is almost never happened. They're welcomed into different Native nations. Some end up marrying chiefs. There are stories of women who are captured again by white colonialists and keep running away to be with their Native family. Now, in the 19th century, you have this fear of slave rebellions. Again, rapacious slaves, defiling white women. Under Jim Crow, it became known as the brute caricature, and rape hoaxes would set off massacres, such as the Tulsa Race Massacre in 1921. There were other ones. I believe Rosewood started in Florida with a rape hoax and a few others. And the thing is, Emmett Till was killed over a rape hoax, you know, or not even a hoax, just a sexual, and the woman, you know, she recanted. She said that never happened. in the last years of her life. She admitted that that even that mild offense never happened, right? And so these were hoaxes, and so that is what Israel has done. And I urge your listeners to read my Yes Magazine report, as well as the Intercept one, where I lay out, because it's a lot of evidence. And I'm going to be coming out with another piece where I explain this narrative and how it fits into the Israeli propaganda. But the Israeli government has been clear that they are using these fake accounts to allow them to carry out this brutal war, which is genocide. And so this is just an industrial scale Tulsa race massacre. It's a giant rape hoax that Israel has successfully foisted on the public. Like, look at the Central Park Five, right? I mean, the media all ran with that. And that basically it was a lynching in the media that these five young boys who were completely innocent were guilty of this heinous rape in Central Park. And of course, Donald Trump was taking out full page ads calling for their execution. And no one questioned that. Another way I liken how the press treats Israel. Listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the term copaganda, where basically the media will report anything the cops say as like the golden truth. Like, how many times have we seen the media report police lies about murders committed by cops? And then the real story comes out, usually through video evidence, that no, this was not a case of resisting. No, the person was not pointing a gun or acting in this violent, threatening manner, that this was outright murder. And yet the media always still believe what the cops have to say. So why should we be surprised that the media are basically acting as a mouthpiece for Israel, America's aircraft carrier in the Middle East?
That's investigative journalist Arun Gupta speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on April 4th, 2024.